private investigator means two things. You can be sure you'll run into trouble, and you can never be sure you'll get out of it. Not much you can do about it, I guess, except, like Julie always says,
walk softly, Peter Troy.
And now Peter Troy investigates the high-pressure harpy.
You hear of people being bitten by the love bug, and maybe there's more than a little sense to that expression. In my book, love is a very odd kind of bug with more variations than the common cold virus, so that no two sets of lovers seem affected in quite the same way by this most deadly of diseases. Oh, but my philosophizing on the subject of love has come about as a result of my calling to mind a certain doll by the name of Diana Hoffman, and a case that actually began in a little corner store run by a guy whose name was Hegarty.
Well, there we are, Mrs. Pettifer. 2 and 7. 3 shillings, 4, 6, 8, and 2 is 10. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Hegarty. Oh, look at the time. I must hurry home and feed my pussy.
Goodbye, Mrs. Pettifer. Now, sir, what can I do for you?
I stick up this place. Give me all the money, quick.
What? Look here.
This shotgun blow your head off. Quick, all the money.
You'll never get away with this.
The money, I say.
All right, all right.
Mr. Hegarty. Oh, dear.
Shut up, you.
You'll never get away with this.
Open the money box. Here I do it.
Give me that gun. Watch out.
Help! Police! Help!
I get out of here. You follow and I shoot. Stop, thief! Stop, thief!
There was something about the holdup in the papers, but I didn't take too much notice of it. That kind of caper is strictly for the police. In fact, when Diana Hoffman swept into my office like a galleon under full sail, nothing was further from my mind than gunmen holding up corner stores. For not only was she stacked, but she must have stood 5'11" in her stockings. And she had a way of making me feel that I was about 4'3" on tippy toes. Well, Julie was out at lunch, and like a dumb cluck, I'd left the door to my own office open, so that there was little to impede the overpowering Amazon's invasion.
You'll be Peter Troy, no doubt.
I'm Troy.
Good. Shall I sit here? Yes, this will do.
Diana Hoffman.
The Hoffman Business College, you know.
Business College? Are you sure you don't mean a gymnasium?
If that's meant to be funny, Troy, I can assure you it doesn't appeal to me that way.
I've come
here on business, your business. You are a private investigator, are you not?
Well, that's what the sign on the door says, Miss Hoffman.
You don't look much like a private investigator. Rather too soppy, if you don't mind my saying so.
Oh, why should I mind that? You go right ahead.
Anyway, you'll have to do. I can't spend any more time on this project.
Project?
They've arrested Heinrich Kapell for holding up Hegarty's store.
They have? Oh.
You don't sound as though that means much to you.
Why, Miss Hoffman, it means a great deal to me. Of course, I've never heard of this Heinrich Kapell or Hegarty or his store, but, oh, that's just a detail.
Read your papers, man. For goodness sake, I should have thought a man in your line of business would be well up on all local crime.
They say we learn something new every day, Miss Hoffman. Now you know.
Know what?
That a man in my line of business is not always well up on all local crime.
Troy, I'll thank you not to make frivolous remarks. I haven't much time.
Well, I...
Now, the position is this. Paul Capel's father is a shiftless person, but probably not the kind of man to commit a crime like this. Paul's convinced of his innocence, and I'm prepared to support him in that. At least I'm prepared to go to some trouble and expense to get at the truth.
Oh, why?
Why? Because Paul Capel's my future husband, that's why.
Your future husband? Does he know?
Of course he knows. I've already told him. He's one of my brightest pupils at the college, and he's good material. The kind of man I can lick into shape.
Yeah, I'm sure, but what shape?
Keep your mind on what we have in front of us, Troy.
Miss Hoffman, my mind is well and truly on what's in front of me. Whew, to tell the truth, I'm just fascinated by it.
What?
Yes, I was just looking
I'm
at your...
I'm back for lunch, Mr. Troy.
I was just looking at your handbag, Miss Hoffman. Is that imported leather?
Handbag?
I didn't know you had a client coming in at this time, Mr. Troy. I have my notebook here. You'll want me to take notes, of course.
Yeah, sure. Miss Hoffman, this is my secretary, Miss Summers.
How do you do, Miss Hoffman? Have you been getting along all right with Mr. Troy?
Getting along? I don't want to get along with him. If you ask me, he's pretty much of a fool. Handbag, indeed, of all the soppy dribble.
Miss Hoffman wants us to look into the Hegarty case, Julie. Look it up for me, will you?
The Hegarty case.
That's right. Under H for handbag. I mean Hegarty. Look, I hope you'll excuse me, Miss Hoffman, but I think I'll go out and have some lunch.
Oh, but you had lunch an hour ago.
You know me, Julie, just a growing lad. I need lots of nourishment. Now, Miss Summers will take down all your particulars, Miss Hoffman. She's better at that than I am. I'll see you in half an hour, Julie.
That's right, Troy. We've arrested this Henry or Heinrich Capel. Hegarty has identified him as the man who held him up, open and shut.
Inspector, you shouldn't say things like that. You know it's only a temptation to me.
What is?
Well, when you're so smug about having solved a case quickly, I just love to prove you're wrong. And it's happened so often.
It has not happened often. I'll have you know
that... For the present, Inspector, suppose you just have me know the rest of the dope on this Hegarty case. We can tear each other's eyes out later.
There's nothing to know. Three eyewitnesses saw the holdup.
Mm-hmm. And they are?
A Mrs. Janet Pettifer, a James Billings, and one Archibald Mockridge. The two men were just entering the shop. Mrs. Pettifer was in it at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose they've identified Capel, too.
Well, not yet, no.
Not yet? Inspector, you're slipping.
Now, look, the old lady, Mrs. Pettifer, is in hospital in a state of shock. The two men caught only a glimpse of the bandit.
Oh, then you're not going to be able to rely on their testimony too much. No positive identification, even though they were there.
Look, Troy, if you come here just to make trouble for me...
I'd like to, Inspector, but I'm a little busy right now.
Well, I don't need you to lecture me on the rules of identification, if you're thinking of doing that.
No, and you don't need me to tell you that so far you have only a very shaky case.
Well, at least it's a start.
Earlier you said it was open and shut.
That was to get rid of you. I get a little tired of running into you on every second case I have.
Well, take heart, Inspector. That's only because you have all the interesting cases. Say, what about the description of this bandit?
It's all here. There we are, about 5'10", heavy features, large walrus moustache, dressed in a long, very worn gabardine overcoat, large soft felt hat pulled well down.
Mm-hmm.
He carried a sawn-off shotgun under the coat, apparently hanging from a shoulder strap, so nobody would notice it prematurely.
Yeah. And this description fits Capel.
Of course it does. I told you, Hegarty knows Capel by sight. He lives in the neighborhood. And he swears it was Capel.
I wouldn't harp on that if I were you, Inspector. You know it isn't enough. Now, just let's have the names of those witnesses again, will you?
That's correct, Miss Summers. And I guess I'd say that description fitted the man pretty well. Although, as I told the police, I didn't see him too clearly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Billings. There's nothing you feel you can add to that. You were at the door of the shop when the bandit ran out, I believe.
Yes, I was. Mockridge and I, he lives just up the street. We were going in almost together. That's when we heard the man call out.
You heard him say something? What was it?
Yeah, it's hard to say now. Something about sticking up the place, and he wanted the money. But it was not too distinct. You know how these Italians talk?
Italian? He had an Italian accent?
That's right, broad Italian.
You're sure it was Italian?
Yeah, quite sure.
Do you speak Italian, Mr. Billings?
No, not me. But I know an Italian accent when I hear one.
French, you say, Mr. Mockridge?
I'm telling you, aren't I? He was a Frenchie, all right.
Do you happen to speak French, Mr. Mockridge?
Eh?
I said, do you speak French?
Speak French? Oh, no, of course not. What's wrong with English?
But you're positive that the bandit spoke with a French accent?
Of course I'm sure. I said so, didn't I? I was over in France during the war.
Oh, the last war?
No. First one.
Oh.
Only French I ever bothered with was Parlez-vous and Tout Sweet and some of them mademoiselles from Armentières. Oh, they were beauties too, I can tell you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mockridge.
But I know a French accent when I hear one. You can bet on that, son.
Definitely Italian, Pete.
French.
But Billings said...
Yeah, and Mockridge said French. Of course, he doesn't speak French and probably hasn't heard a French accent in 40 years, but he's certain sure.
Billings doesn't speak Italian either.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? You know, this reminds me of that Edgar Allan Poe story.
Hmm? What story is that?
The Murders in the Rue Morgue. Ever read it?
No, I don't think so.
Well, there was this doll who was cut to pieces by someone. And the neighbors all heard a great yelling and screaming in the room before the murder.
Yes.
Now, one said he heard an Italian voice, another said it was German, and so on. None of the neighbors could speak the language, but they were sure of the accents.
That is like this case. What happened in the end? Did they find out who did it?
Yeah.
And was it a German or an Italian or what have you?
No, it was a gorilla.
Oh, Pete, stop kidding.
I'm not kidding. It was a gorilla.
You mean it might have been a gorilla that held up Hegarty's store?
Oh, Julie, now who's kidding?
But you said that...
Julie, remind me not to tell you any more creepy stories from Edgar Allan Poe. It's too unnerving for you.
I don't think you're the one to talk about being unnerved. The way that Diana Hoffman had you, your hands were practically shaking.
Oh, I know it. Say, have you ever before seen so much woman all in one piece?
Peter Troy, you had better...
save it, Julie. Come on, let's go see what we can find out at Mrs. Pettifer's home. She's the last of our so-called eyewitnesses. It could be she thought the bandit was an Arab. Julie is always inclined to cluck like a mother hen or something when beautiful dolls are within arm's length of me. But had she only known, she needn't have been too worried about that high-pressure harpy Diana Hoffman. Built, that doll may have been, but I like my women somewhat less overpowering and in smaller doses. Somehow, although I hadn't met him, I couldn't help feeling sorry for Paul Capel, the guy she'd decided to marry. And also the son of the man Inspector Caswell was sure had committed the robbery at Hegarty's store. Oh, I personally didn't want too many conferences with the very dominating Diana. I was anxious to get rid of this case quick. And so, trying to short-circuit visiting Mrs. Pettifer in hospital, Julie and I went along to her modest little cottage.
But, Pete, if Mrs. Pettifer's in hospital, what do you hope to find out here?
Well, she lives with her maiden sister. Her husband's been dead for years. I found that out from Inspector Caswell.
Yes?
Oh, good afternoon. My name is Troy. Peter Troy. My card, ma'am.
Peter Troy, private investigator. Oh, you'll have come about the gas.
The gas?
Yes, it's been playing up something dreadful, you know. It keeps going blip, 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 like that.
It does?
Yes, I do hope you can fix it before I cook Twiddle's tea. She hates raw meat, you know.
Twiddle?
My sister's pussy, you know. Do come in, Mr. Inspector.
Oh, yeah, thank you. You're Mrs. Pettifer's sister, I guess.
That's right. I'm Agnes Reedy. Miss Reedy, I might say.
Miss Reedy, this is my secretary, Miss Summers.
Oh, how do you do, dear?
Hello.
My, fancy a gas inspector bringing his secretary with him and no box of tools. How do you hope to fix the gas without tools?
Well, I haven't come to fix the gas, Miss Reedy. I'm a detective, a private detective.
Oh, dear. Is it about Twiddles annoying that cocky next door?
No. It's about the man your sister saw robbing Mr. Hegarty's shop.
Oh, that. Oh, but the police have already been about that.
Mr. Troy is working for the man the police have arrested, Miss Reedy. We're trying to prove his innocence.
Well, I don't really see how you can do that if he did it.
Well, we're not satisfied he did do it at all, Miss Reedy.
But he must have.
Oh, what makes you say that?
Well, Hackney is eccentric.
Eccentric?
Yes, he's a German, isn't he, that Capel?
Oh, yeah, I believe so.
Well, there you are, then. All foreigners are eccentric. Everybody knows that.
Well, the foreigners don't, Miss Reedy.
But I mean to say, dressing like that, most odd. You can't tell me that he's not eccentric.
What, you mean the long coat and the big hat well pulled down?
Hmm.
Well, of course, that was to disguise himself a little.
How could you disguise that great big moustache? Mercy me, it's like a yard broom.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And anybody who'd wear that kind of overcoat over denim trousers, well, and I'm sure those rubber shoes can't be good for the feet. Rubber simply will not breathe, you know. My father used to say...
Wait a minute, Miss Reedy. We haven't heard anything about trousers and shoes before.
Really, Mr. Troy, did you think the man was barefooted?
Well, no, but...
As for the trousers... Well, perhaps I shouldn't have mentioned it.
Oh, why not?
Well, it's not exactly a nice subject, is it? I mean, in front of this young lady, one doesn't speak of a man's nether garments in mixed company as a rule, does one?
Perhaps we could waive the strict rules of propriety on this occasion, Miss Reedy. This is a serious matter. A man's liberty might be at stake.
Oh, well... Perhaps as long as you understand that I don't usually talk about such things so freely.
Of course. Miss Reedy, how do you happen to know so much about the bandit? You weren't at the store at the time of the robbery.
No, but Agatha, my sister, she tells me everything. She gave me every last detail. I can see it all as though I was actually there.
Well, that's very interesting, Miss Reedy. Very interesting indeed.
Another cup, Pete?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, thanks, honey.
Well, what now? You have hardly had a word to say for yourself since we came into this coffee shop. You must have been doing some very heavy thinking.
Yeah. Julie, do you have those notes you took from Diana Hoffman?
Mm-hmm. Right here in my purse. What do you want to know?
About the Capel family. Read it off.
The Capels. Just a minute. Capel. Here we are. Father, Heinrich Capel. Mother died 6 years ago. Two children. Paul, aged 28, and Edward, aged 22.
Mm-hmm. Edward.
What about him?
Well, you tell me about him. What do the notes say?
Paul's a hard worker. Goes to night school, the Hoffman Business College.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Here we are, Edward. Different type from Paul. More like his father, who is said to be shiftless. Edward mixes with a certain undesirable element, whatever she means by that.
Okay, that'll hold us for the moment.
What are you getting at, Pete?
A pair of blue jeans and suede rubber-soled shoes, worn under an old gabardine overcoat.
It does sound an unlikely combination.
Yeah. Now, the guy who wore the jeans and the shoes would be more likely to have a leather jacket or some such.
Hmm.
And my guess is we'll find that old Capel never wears jeans or suede shoes.
All right, then who does?
Somebody a lot younger.
What? You don't mean Edward, his son.
That's the guy I'm brooding over at the moment.
But Hegarty knows Capel by sight, and he said the man looked just like Capel.
Oh, Julie, a son can look pretty much like his father.
Well, what about the moustache? A big walrus moustache.
Oh, Julie, don't give me that as a stumbling block. Those moustaches are among the stock in trade of any old novelty shop.
You mean to say that Edward Capel put on a moustache like his father's, dressed up in that old coat and hat to complete the illusion, and took a gun and robbed Hegarty?
You might say I am toying with that idea. Can you poke any holes in it?
Dozens.
Name one.
Well, the accent. The man spoke with an accent. Now, according to Miss Hoffman, the Capels have been in this country since Edward was a small child. They've even anglicized his name.
So, Edward doesn't have an accent. And you don't think he could simulate enough of an accent to sound like his old man? Or make people think it was his old man's voice?
Well, I don't know.
He could. Any more points?
Pete, we're talking about the son of a man they've arrested. It's hard to believe he'd let his own father go to jail for him.
It's even harder to believe that he planned it that way. But according to my theory, that's just what he did.
Oh, what a little monster he'd need to be.
No, not necessarily a monster. Just sick, maybe. Come on. Let's pay a call at the Capel house and see who we find at home.
You can come in if you like, Mr. Troy. Though I can't help you much.
Oh, thanks.
If you don't mind coming through to the kitchen, I'm just making some tea.
Oh, perhaps I can make it for you.
No, it's okay. I can manage. Would you like some?
Oh, no, thank you. We've just had coffee.
I just found a leak in the kettle, so I've had to put the water on the stove in a saucepan. And my old man was going to get a new kettle, but he never seemed to have the money for it.
Well, it doesn't look as though he'll be buying any kettles for quite a while now, Eddie.
No, I don't. Anyway, don't expect me to say I'm sorry.
Sorry?
For my old man. Don't expect me to burst into tears if he goes to jail. He had it coming to him.
He's got it coming to him now, if he did that job at Hegarty's. But that doesn't mean that you can't feel sorry for him.
Why should I feel like that? What did he ever do for me? Except belt my ears off.
Well, I don't know. You tell us what he did for you.
Nothing, that's what. Absolutely nothing. It was always Paul. Paul was the bright one, the genius. He was going to do great things. Only since Mum died, the old man's even lost interest in Paul. He hardly even works these days, just loafs about, talking about how good things used to be.
And robbing stores in between whiles,
Pete.
Huh? Well, it's true, Julie. This kid's old man sounds like a real creep. Right, Eddie?
Yeah, that's just what he is.
Kept you short of money, too, I guess, huh?
Money? He had never had no money. Not for years now. I've had to keep us both.
What about your brother, Paul? Doesn't he live here with you?
Oh, he is, sir, but he's going to be married. He's moved into a place of his own. And any money he has, it goes in the bank and stays there.
Yes, I expect Miss Hoffman would see to that.
You seem to have a little bit of money to spend on yourself, Eddie. Those are pretty natty suede sneakers you're wearing.
Oh, are these? You like them? Yeah, I got them cheap, though, from a bloke I know. Damaged stock from a fire, you know.
Or from another store robbery, maybe, huh?
And what do you mean?
The spiv who sold you those shoes cheap. He didn't get them from any damaged stock, did he? He's a thief, just like you.
Yeah, I don't like the way you're talking, mister. You cut that out.
No use, Eddie. You've sewn up all the loose ends for us.
Loose ends?
Yeah. You've hated your father for years. And in holding up Hegarty's store, you saw a chance to get your hands on some money and at the same time get your father put away in jail.
Now, what are you talking about? You can't say things like that to me.
I can say them, and I can prove they're true.
You can't prove nothing. Well, Hegarty himself said the bloke who robbed him was my old man.
Yeah, but Hegarty didn't notice that the bandit was wearing blue jeans and suede shoes, Eddie. And I guess it's going to be easy to establish that your father never wears those things.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Get your jacket, Eddie. We're taking you to police headquarters.
Wait. Okay, I know when I'm beaten. My jacket's in this cupboard over here. I'll get it.
Oh, this water's nearly boiling. I'd better turn the gas off. We won't need it now.
Okay, you two, get your hands up, quick.
What? You dumb idiot, put that shotgun down.
I'm warning you. No, I'm getting out of here. And if either of you wants to be very dead, you just try to follow me.
Mind what you're doing with that water, Julie. Don't spill it. Don't spill it on yourself.
What's that? Oh, yes.
You two just stay where you are now.
I'm coming for you, Eddie.
Stand back, Troy. Julie!
Right!
Oh, good girl, Julie. I hope you get the message about the hot water. Give me the gun, Eddie. Thanks.
It was nearly boiling. It must have hurt you.
I hope so. Come on, you young jerk. Knock off the wailing. You don't hurt that bad. You've got an appointment downtown with a certain Inspector Caswell.
And you have one with a certain Miss Diana Hoffman.
What? Oh, don't remind me, Julie. Oh, brother, when I meet that Amazon again...
Ah, yes. You'd better walk softly, Peter Troy.
What we were able to give him, dear old Inspector Caswell had no trouble in pinning the rap for the robbery on Eddie Capel and releasing his father. None of it made anyone much happier, but that's the way it had to be. It didn't make me any happier, I can tell you. And when I had to report back to Diana Hoffman, it was one time I was glad to have Julie around. I couldn't escape the feeling that that giant doll was always on the point of eating me alive. And if I have to die at the hands of a woman, that is not the way.
Walk Softly, Peter Troy is an Artranda production written by Cressig Jenkinson and directed by Russ Reiter. Thank you.